Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to this week's Oscars. I'm Nick Rohrkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
We are so close. We're almost to the Oscars. This is our final episode before the ceremony, and I am so excited. I'm also excited for it to happen and for us to relax after the fact, but today we'll be talking about our final Oscar predictions. And again, I'm sure these will change, but a lot of these categories are pretty locked up. And I feel weird saying that because that's never the case. But things are feeling pretty certain at this point, which is strange.
It is strange. I'm feeling oddly secure in a lot of these predictions. So if you've listened to any of our final predictions episodes in the past, we put the categories in three groups: in the bag, toss up, and anybody's guess. And this year we have more in the bag categories than any other year. And I'm wondering if you can get a perfect score again, like you did the 2019 year. Not to scare you.
Oh boy, I don't think I can. I don't know. I always change things at the last second, and that helped me in that year. But I don't know what, if there was like one or two categories that I would change at the last minute. I think it would come down to shorts, which are in our anybody's guess category, and I truly have no idea with those. And that year, we had shorts that had momentum to win. And this year, I'm feeling way less certain about those.
Yeah, the shorts are always the tricky ones. That's where you can get really tripped up and miss certain predictions. So we'll talk through those, but I want to give you the floor to make the announcement about the huge movie that we just had premiere, which we will be talking about coming up. I think that will be a very, very fun episode featuring the return of Smasher Pass. But yeah, the floor is yours to talk about Dune Part 2.
Well, I'm glad you also really enjoyed it. That was one of the biggest things going into the movie, of everybody just singing its praises. And I had so much anticipation going into my screening on Friday, but Lord, this is just an epic, a sci-fi masterpiece that we have that Denis Villeneuve made. And yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. We'll cover it in a few weeks. I need to see it again to just digest everything. But yeah, just multiple wide angle shots throughout the film just left my jaw on the floor. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. It's one of the biggest movies we've had since Lord of the Rings. You know, it does tie in with Star Wars and how epic that was at the time. And there's just so much to talk about. All of the components, the whole time I was just like, stop thinking about the Oscars, stop thinking about the Oscars, because if we had it this year, which we can also talk about, I think it would just be destroying the competition. But I also like that Warner Brothers was kind of smart here in taking it out of the equation, because Oppenheimer versus Dune Part 2 in certain categories, it would just be too close to call. Knowing how much Oppenheimer is steamrolling the competition at this point, it also just scares me.
So we will be going through some listener questions today as we go through our predictions. And we had a question about how Dune Part 2 could have factored into the equation if it came out in November. I think that's kind of an interesting what if to consider, because the crafts of Dune Part 2 are really what stood out to me as I was watching, some more than others. We'll get to that when we do our deep dive. But yeah, I preferred this significantly to Part 1, which I don't know if that is a hot take, but I will say that if you were skeptical about Part 1 or didn't like Part 1, there might be things in Part 2 that connect with you a bit more. I still have my quibbles with certain things, and I think that's just a Denis Villeneuve thing that we can dive into when we get into that episode. I think it'll be a good conversation in a few weeks after we have both seen it again, and I think we plan on really dissecting it. We're both book readers too, so we can get into those changes, because I think those are also really interesting. I already want to talk about Dune Part 2 and not about the Oscars, but it's fine.
Well, I pulled out Dune Messiah. I have the book, and now I'm itching to read it, because Denis has said that he's making the movie and that he's continuing this trilogy, and I'm just excited to see where it goes, because two films later, we know he has the power to tackle this huge undertaking. And I'm curious where this saga continues and how he's going to, based on the time jump that I've heard happens.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that as well, because the way that part two sets up Messiah is interesting, especially with certain details that he left out from the end of the book. But we will get there in a few weeks. I think getting back into the swing of things for this season, yesterday we had the USC Scripter Awards where American Fiction won. That can be a good indicator of where adapted screenplay will go, so we'll get to that category. And then the Cinema Audio Society, Oppenheimer, won there. We still have a handful of guild ceremonies yet to happen as of today, the day of recording. I'm not really sure if these will affect much, to be honest, but we have the ACE Eddie Awards for editing. Those are March 3rd. Actually, most of these are today. We also have ASC, the American Society of Cinematographers, and MPSE, the Motion Picture Sound Editors. The one that's waiting until after the Oscars, the WGA, we have those on April 14th. By the time we get there, I don't even know if I will be paying attention to who wins the WGA.
And honestly, it doesn't matter. So we'll talk about those categories as well. But yeah, come April, it just feels so weird being so late this year, delayed from the strikes. And had the awards conversation been different leading up to the Oscars, I'd be curious if the Oscars would have impacted the winners. But again, I think at this point, we pretty much know where that's going to go, even with certain films being ineligible. But let's get started with some of the easier categories. We'll start with our In the Bag grouping. First off, with International Feature, our nominees are Io Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, The Teacher's Lounge, and The Zone of Interest. This one, without Anatomy of a Fall, feels pretty easy. Do we both have The Zone of Interest here?
I have The Zone of Interest. It being the only Best Picture nominee of the group, too, and being represented in other categories, like you said, not having Anatomy of a Fall here, it feels pretty clearly like it's going to be The Zone of Interest. And that will be the UK's first win. I'm very, very excited, though, to see Glazer and team go up to accept this Oscar.
Yeah, such a deserving win. If it doesn't win anywhere else, I'm happy that it will be an Oscar winner, and it definitely deserves it.
Next up, we have film editing. Our nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. This feels to me pretty clearly like an Oppenheimer win. We have seen this collect editing prizes earlier in the season. It recently won the BAFTA. Also, though, just thinking about how editing and sound tend to go hand in hand, and this being the only crossover between editing and sound, it feels like Jennifer Lame will walk away with this Oscar. Do you also have Oppenheimer?
Yeah, I have Oppenheimer too. It does feel like a really close-knit sound editing crossover. We'll get to sound later, but with Oppenheimer winning the BAFTA as well, that kind of secured it for me. We do have the ACE Eddie Awards later, but at this point, we don't even really need to look at those to know who's going to win. Next, we have cinematography. Our nominees are El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. This is another Oppenheimer win. It was going to be all year. I think the IMAX of it all and how they created this film stock with Kodak, this new black and white 65 millimeter stock, was just so impressive, and having to re-engineer cameras in order to make it work and fit just blew me away. We talk about all of this and more and all of the nominees on our Contenders episode, so go back and check that out if you haven't heard that yet. But yeah, this is Oppenheimer's to lose, and I think it should win.
I mean, for me, this was always, in as far as who should win, between Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. I do love the cinematography of Maestro as well, but I think this will be Hoyte van Hoytema's first Oscar for all of the reasons that you already shared. I'm going to add that he should have been nominated for Nope last year, but this will be a great win for him. Next up, we have Original Song. Our nominees are The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot, I'm Just Ken from Barbie, It Never Went Away from your favorite movie American Symphony, With Jage, A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon, and What Was I Made For from Barbie. Do we both have What Was I Made For here? I feel like maybe there could be an outside shot for something like I'm Just Ken, but What Was I Made For also won the Grammy, and it just feels like the song that has been playing everywhere all season. It's been the song that people have been talking about, and honestly, the way that it's kind of dominated radio play and just the cultural consciousness reminds me of Shallow from A Star Is Born. I feel like it is that popular and around, so that's what I'm going for. What do you think?
It really is. I love when songs like this, or just categories in general, but where something is so beloved and listened to and watched by so many people. And this is one of those wins that is really telling for the year that we had in music. And it's not just a good song in a movie. So I will be happy, even if this is Barbie's only win, which makes me hurt inside, but I think it's a really deserved win too. Next, we have original score. Our nominees are American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. I wish the season went a little differently, where this may have been in our toss-up grouping, because I think Killers should have won more along the way. But Oppenheimer, again, is just winning so many awards. Goranson won at the SCL, the Society of Composers and Lyricists, while Robbie Robertson did win at the Hollywood Music and Media Awards. Not to make like a posthumous win a thing, but I think it would be really deserved for him to win. But I think Ludwig Göransson is the one to beat here.
I'm in complete agreement. I wish that Robbie Robertson could win this Oscar. Not that I dislike the Oppenheimer score. I think it's a good score. The Killers of the Flower Moon score is the one that has stuck with me and the one that I think is the best use of score in a film as well. But yeah, I completely agree. I think this category should look very different than what we have here. I love that Zone of Interest score, which that was here, The Boy and the Heron. There are so many options that we could have had, but we went with this group, which is fine. But anyway, I also have Oppenheimer. Next, we have Supporting Actor. Our nominees are Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. This is one of our acting categories this year where we've had a sweeper. Robert Downey Jr. has won every industry award and a number of critics' prizes. And when you have a sweeper in an acting category, there is no reason to really predict anything else. And this is one of those places where just you shouldn't be foolish and go out on a limb. So I'm going with Robert Downey Jr. What about you?
Yeah, I also have Robert Downey Jr. This is just something from the very beginning, from our draft, that I saw happening, because it's somewhat of a like four-year time award. You know, he's been nominated before and he's worked on so many movies. He's been in the Marvel Universe, and I think this was a good jump away from that for him. And basically all of these actors have been nominated this entire season, and he's just won every single prize. So as much as I would like Ryan Gosling to win here for his comedy, and so we can stop seeing the Fall Guy trailer before movies, it's not gonna happen. It's Robert Downey Jr.'s.
I know. I'd love De Niro here too, like we talked about in our Contenders episode, but yeah, it's a career win for Downey, I think.
Next, we have another sweeper category in Supporting Actress. Our nominees here, we have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad, and Devine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Part of me is just so surprised, and I love to see it, but just how many awards Devine has won this year. Like, who knew it would be possible for anyone to accomplish this feat, especially for a small-ish film like The Holdovers? But I'm so happy. I love her performance as Mary Lamb, and I can't wait for her to win her Oscar.
Yeah, she's going to be a great winner. I love the performance as well. I can't wait to see what she's wearing. She's had so many great red carpet looks this season, so I'm really excited for that, of course. But it's a great performance and one that we've loved and have really talked about all season, whether or not we thought she was going to win. We just kept singing Devine Joy Randolph's praises for this movie, so I'm excited that she's going to win an Oscar. Next, we have original screenplay. Our nominees are Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives. I think this is a great category. We just talked about it last week on our Contender series. I think there was a time when we thought this would be Barbie's Oscar because we thought Barbie would be an original screenplay. And then I think when Barbie was out of the equation, we thought, well, this could be the holdovers here. But I think it's Anatomy of a Fall. Pretty clearly, I think this is the place where they're going to want to reward that film. And the screenplay, like we talked about last week, is just so intricate and well-designed, well-written. It also has those big monologues that actors love, too, and great dialogue and structure. It also just won the Golden Globe and the BAFTA, so it feels like that's the big thing you have to factor in here. So I think it's going to be Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, so do I. I think this is where, and we'll still mention a few categories where Oppenheimer is going to win, but I think this is where the Anatomy of a Fall train starts, and it's a really deserved win. I love the screenplay. I love what Arthur Harari and Justine Triet did with that material and in writing this really intricate play. And I think the love for the film is showing that it has to win some of those big prizes, and that if there were any upsets, it could be possible in other categories. But I think the wins at BAFTA and the Golden Globes, also the Gotham Awards, and at the Spirit Awards, it didn't win screenplay since there's only one category, but it did in international film. There's just so much love for it around the world, and I think it should win. You know, I wish there was some love along the way for the holdovers in Past Lives, but I'm also happy with Anatomy of a Fall. This was my one category where I'm like, pick one, let it win, because I'm very happy with many of them. Our next category is actor. Our nominees, we have Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. This is almost a sweeper category. There was one point in the season when Paul Giamatti won at the Globes that maybe I was hoping for a shift, but Cillian Murphy has been steamrolling ever since, and winning SAG, I think, was the final straw for me, where it really is his. And surprisingly, this being his first nomination too, but I think it's a deserved win.
Yeah, I think there was a time when I thought this would be Bradley Cooper's Oscar. And
that too, that was a long time ago.
A long time ago, but it's really just, you know, every year he has a new movie. I have to entertain the thought that this might be the year, but it's just not. And that's okay. I'm trying not to mourn. I think I moved on from the possibility a long time ago. But yeah, I think Cillian winning SAG was a big deal because they don't tend to go for those subtle performances. And I also thought originally that he might be like a Peter O'Toole. I know I compared Oppenheimer a bit to Lawrence of Arabia when it came out. And that movie won Best Picture and was so celebrated in the technical categories. But Peter O'Toole didn't win, even though he was on screen nearly the entire movie, and he was Lawrence. So I thought, you know, we might just see history repeat in that way, but not this year. I also thought Giamatti could win. I really love that performance, but I think Cillian will be a great winner. And I think, yeah, after winning most of the prizes aside from Critics' Choice, it's going to be him. Next, we have sound. Our nominees are The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. I know that The Zone of Interest won the BAFTA, and I would love, absolutely love to see that win here. I think it would completely deserve it. I just feel like that's kind of tricking us a little bit, and we just need to stick with Oppenheimer. I feel like that just feels like the check-the-box winner here, and it's going to pair with its editing win. Do you feel the same way, that this is pretty easily just going to be Oppenheimer's?
Yeah, I do. I think the BAFTA also, we can see that win as maybe just skewing towards a British film, which they do sometimes. And again, The Zone of Interest is doing very well for itself. It had 5 Oscar nominations. And I wouldn't only chalk it up to that, but I think this is Oppenheimer's. It also just won at the Cinema Audio Society yesterday. An epic film, a huge undertaking. The sound in the movie, I think, is one of Nolan's best. And yeah, this does feel pretty tied up at this point too. Next up, we have adapted screenplay. Our nominees here are American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. This is not how I saw the season going when it started, but no. American Fiction is dominating. It also just won the USC Scripter yesterday, which again is like the final straw for me, where even at the BAFTA, with its sole nomination, bringing that home, it just shows how much love this movie and this screenplay have. So I think this is American Fictions. Do you agree?
I do. I will say, like, a few days ago, and I keep turning this over in my mind, and I don't know if it's just a temptation or if there's any validity to it, but I keep thinking, will they just down ballot vote for Oppenheimer? Could we see a case where this is like Argo? And it just gets swept up in it and wins the screenplay Oscar and surprises. I'm going back and forth with what I'm predicting here. I know that the smart choice is American Fiction, and that is what I've switched back to because it has just cleaned up everywhere. And again, the USC Scripter win, but the BAFTA win, that's the biggest thing for me that just reminded me of Coda when that one screenplay. And I was like, what is going on here? How did they pick this movie? This has to be a sign for something. And I think the Academy also had a stronger response to American Fiction than BAFTA did, even with score nominations, Sterling K. Brown getting in. So it does feel likely, but this is one that I might be tempted to switch back to Oppenheimer at the last minute just because of the love for the movie.
And that's what I expected, is Oppenheimer to win somewhere. And that would have maybe swayed me a little bit. But I think with American Fiction just winning so many prizes, we have to look at that and not at the movie or the grandness of Oppenheimer and it winning so many awards. It does feel weird, though, and this will be on my radar.
Right? Like, it's just kind of strange. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those lurking. Every year, there are a few categories where I second guess myself that seem to be sewn up, but there's always an outside possibility because the membership is just so large. You just don't know.
I mean, if American Fiction does win, I will like that we are spreading the love amongst the Best Picture nominees and just the films in general. So I definitely won't dislike that.
It's funny, we included that in the bag and we're like here sowing doubt, but it's fine. That's what happens if Oscar season goes on so long and you just have time to think about everything. I think you just start second guessing yourself. But I'm not second guessing myself on this last category. Director. Our nominees are Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. Nolan has been sweeping this entire season, and I don't even know who I would predict in second place. I guess my choice, Glazer? But this is just Nolan's in the bag. What do you think?
Yeah, we could have mentioned this as our first category of the day, of the episode, because this is Christopher Nolan's. And it'll be a great win. He has deserved one of these for a while. And I think this is a great movie to win for, actually.
If you were to give Nolan a Best Director Oscar, would it be for Oppenheimer or something else?
No, it'd be for Tenet. I like literally can't get Tenet off my mind. I think even more than Inception. But honestly, Dunkirk would be a really deserving win, actually. And a film loved by the Oscars, too, I think.
Dunkirk made me weep in the theater like a baby in really embarrassing ways. I mean, obviously, I would have given it to Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread that year. But if we're thinking about just like pure film quality, I think I would go with Oppenheimer still.
Again, I think it makes the most sense.
Okay. But you're just like, no, Tenet.
Which makes me feel inside want to say no. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're moving on to our toss-up category. First up, we have production design. Our nominees here are Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. So what do you have here?
I mean, this could have been in our in the bag category, I think. There was always a part of me where in the back of my head, I just kept thinking like, oh, is this a place where Oppenheimer's dominance could come through? Or, you know, is Barbie really beloved even though it didn't win the Guild? Like, there are certain things that just keep turning over in my head. I have Poor Things because I think it makes the most sense. It's the flashiest nominee. It won ADG, so the Art Directors Guild and the Set Decorators Society of America. It won the BAFTA, which that always felt like a BAFTA win to me. But I don't know. I think Ruth DeYoung might be sneakier here than we think. I'm predicting Poor Things, but I would not be shocked if she somehow won and got caught up in the Oppenheimer sweep.
Maybe Oppenheimer and Killers are too similar. But again, Oppenheimer is the bigger movie. It's going to win more awards or just more nominated. So I think that has the edge. But yeah, I think Poor Things with the double win at the Guilds. And then Oppenheimer won at ADG while Barbie won at the SDSA. So I think those are next on the list, but I will go with Poor Things here, again, just for how beloved that movie was and throughout the award season, how much it seemed to gain momentum with each month. And I think it's weird enough, it's outlandish enough, there's so much going into it that it does make sense for it to win compared to maybe like a sweeping grand epic like Oppenheimer or Killers.
Yeah. Oppenheimer, I was just thinking about because she won period feature at ADG, which was sort of a surprise. She beat Jack Fisk there for Killers. She beat something like Asteroid City. Like there were just, I think that was a pretty significant win. So just keeping an eye on it. But next we have costume design. Our nominees are Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. I think there are two ways that this could go here, but what do you think?
These two categories, I just wish were Barbies. I wish they were easily Barbies.
Me too.
And that's how the season started and what we were thinking. But again, the Poor Things momentum just grew and grew. And I think one thing you come away from that movie thinking about and remembering are the costumes. And even though there was so much history to Barbie, I think this will be Poor Things. And with the Guild at the Costume Designers Guild, Barbie and Poor Things won. Also Saltburn. I think if Saltburn were here, we would be having a different conversation. I think it could be like a three-way for the win. But with them both winning at the Guild, I think this is more of a toss-up, but I will lean towards Poor Things.
Yeah, I'm going with Poor Things. As much as I would love Barbie to win, I feel like they really tend to default to period costumes here. And there are period costumes in Barbie. And the role of the costumes in Barbie is so important to the characters. And they're so beautiful and fun. And they show all of that archival wear, which is great. And the thought that went into those costumes. But I think they'll be so tempted by what Holly Waddington did with Poor Things. You know, they love a corset, they love petticoats, they love any of those period details that Poor Things has. I also love the costumes in Saltburn and wish they would go with contemporary costumes more often. But yeah, as much as I want this to be Barbies, I'm gonna predict Poor Things.
Next up is animated feature. Our nominees are The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This was, I think, one of our really true toss-ups of the season because The Boy and the Heron won one of the first awards at the Golden Globes, and it also won the BAFTA, but other guilds, other prizes have gone to Spider-Man, and that's who I have predicted here. If they read The Boy and the Heron, though, at the ceremony, I will jump up and scream. I will be so happy.
Yeah, part of the reason why I think we put this in toss-up too is just because, like you said, at one point it did feel like a toss-up with The Boy and the Heron winning BAFTA, but I just feel like when we're thinking about the entire membership, Spider-Man winning PGA and having guild support in places where The Boy and the Heron didn't, just makes me feel like it's going to be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So that is what I'm predicting. But if The Boy and the Heron wins, that will be a very happy surprise.
Yeah, it also won the most Annie Awards with 7. And I was holding out for PGA, but I think that Spider-Man win there solidified it for me instead of Boy and the Heron.
Next up, we have makeup and hairstyling. Our nominees are Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow. I think we have this in toss-up because Poor Things has won in a handful of places, but we've also seen Maestro win with the Guild, the Makeup and Hairstylist Guild. I personally have Maestro here. I feel that the main character makeup is significant. And when you think about what tends to win in this category, whether or not an acting win comes along with it, I just think of last year when they put that photo of Charlie from The Whale, of him showering on the screen. Do you remember this?
Kind of.
That just reminded me of what they vote for here. And I think the work in Maestro is better than that, but it's the most makeup as well for a character. We have aging, we have de-aging. Netflix has also been posting a number of videos of Bradley Cooper in the makeup chair and Kazuhiro, also beloved in this category. So I feel like this is going to be Maestro with an outside shot that Poor Things could win, but I feel pretty confident in Maestro. What about you?
I also have Maestro. I'm leaning towards that because of the Guild win. Barbie also won there, but that's not nominated, so we don't have to worry about that. But Poor Things winning at the BAFTA and having like the more Academy vote, it makes me question if that really could win in the end. And Maestro otherwise doesn't have any predicted wins. Again, Killian's win over Bradley, I think that would have been the other main category, since Carey Mulligan didn't really have a shot at actually winning. We'll get to actress in a second, but this could be a case where the love for Poor Things could win in the end, because it does somewhat feel strange for Maestro to win, like its sole win being in makeup. And I think people, if they're voting, would see, okay, Bradley is Leonard, but then you have Willem Dafoe, who also has a lot of prosthetic work happening as well. Plus everything else in the film and how the hairstyling fits in. There is a lot going on. So I might be switching this at the last minute too, but I have Maestro right now.
I feel like I would have felt better about predicting Poor Things if Willem Dafoe was nominated, because he's the character with the makeup. My hair right now does look like Bella Baxter's. Thankfully, I'm getting a haircut on Tuesday. But I don't think that's what they're going to go with. I think it would be Dafoe here. And because he's not nominated, I think that's another thing that's pushing me towards predicting Maestro.
I'm just surprised, like, Emma Stone and all of her campaigning didn't talk about the accidental hair dyeing more. I feel like that's such a cool little fact about it that could have helped this along the way. And how the hair just grows longer throughout the film as her character transforms. I don't know. There's a lot in there. Our next category is documentary feature. Our nominees are Bobby Wine, The People's President, The Eternal Memory, Four Daughters, To Kill a Tiger, and 20 Days in Mariupol. Who do you have here?
Yeah, I mean, this is always a challenging category to predict, because usually throughout the season, we get another doc that's kind of picking up all of the steam or winning awards, and then it doesn't show up come Oscar nomination time. And I'm going with 20 Days in Mariupol here. I know it lost the PGA to American Symphony, but that's not here. So I think if it lost to something that it was in competition with, I might feel differently. But because that's not here, I'm not really, I think, swayed to go with anything else. It also, it won the DGA and the BAFTA. That's enough for me to see that it has enough support to win here. It also was nominated at the Ace Eddie Awards, and it's also the only Oscar nominee nominated there. So I'm going to 20 Days in Mariupol. Would love an outside shot for To Kill a Tiger, personally, but I think it'll be 20 Days in Mariupol. What do you think?
I would love to see Four Daughters win. It does have support. It won the Gotham, the Spirit, and the César, but I don't know if that's enough. I mean, it premiered at Cannes, it had all of that press for it as well, But I'm also leaning towards 20 Days in Mariupol. I think that winning the BAFTA was pretty big for me. And Bobby Wine, I think in another year, could have steamrolled. I don't know why, but that won the Cinema Eye Audience Prize. But that's about it. So I think also with 20 Days also speaking to current events, I think this makes sense for a win for this year.
Okay, now we have a big one. Best Actress. Our nominees here are Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. This category has been pretty split all year. Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone both won the Golden Globe. Emma Stone won Critics' Choice and BAFTA, and Lily Gladstone won SAG recently. Where are you going here?
I have Lily. Like, as much as I wanted Paul Giamatti to come out of SAG winning, Lily actually achieved that. And that was the turn that I needed to see in the awards conversation to put her back in. Up until that point, I had Emma Stone. And I think if Emma won SAG, this would have been an in the bag category. But that reminded me of last year with Michelle Yeoh. Not as much, but I think she has enough support, especially amongst actors, to help her win. And she's given some amazing speeches, so I'm hoping that pushes her closer and closer to winning the Oscar too.
Yeah, I agree. This is the category I feel most invested in, as usual. And it feels closer than last year to me. I know that Cate Blanchett had won so many awards in the season and she and Michelle Yeoh had split things, but I think at the end of the day, the momentum with Yeoh was so strong and she was tied to a Best Picture win that I think her margin of victory over Cate was probably more than we think. And I think this is going to be a lot closer because Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon, they're not winning Best Picture, so we don't have a Best Picture winner here that we could attach to the winner like we did with Frances in Nomadland or Michelle for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Poor Things is a stronger movie for sure, absolutely, but I'm not seeing, I think, a narrative for Emma Stone to win, aside for just this was a fearless performance, you know, that kind of commentary that's going along with her performance. I don't really think there's a reason really for people to want to give her a second Oscar this early. It can definitely happen. It happened with Hilary Swank. It happened with Jodie Foster. Notably, though, they both won their second Oscar when it was tied to a Best Picture winner. But what I saw with Lily at SAG was kind of everything I needed to see because she got a standing ovation. People were moved to tears. If you hear people talk about Lily, they want to vote for her. And I think that sometimes people want to feel good about who they vote for. And voting for that performance and for her, and I think we saw that in the room that night with SAG. And being the person to give a televised speech during voting also feels significant. I might be also just talking her up because I want her to win so badly. I think it would be one of the best wins we have, and I personally think that Emma Stone's win, if she won here, would age really poorly, and I think she might know that at this point too. And I just think Lily's been everywhere in the past during the week of voting. She presented at the PGAs, she was at the Costume Designers Guild. She's been everywhere, not just around actors, and I think that will count for something.
Yeah, she's been doing the most in the best way. If she wins here, this just made me think of a cursed thought of Past Lives could be the only Best Picture nominee not winning an Oscar this year. We will have potentially 9 of the 10 Best Picture nominees winning an Oscar, which feels huge.
Yeah, I would love that. That's how it should be.
Yeah. So I am hoping for a Lily win here.
Mm-hmm. We also got a question from Duck Soup that I thought was interesting and I thought you might like because these are two of your favorite performances. But it is, could Sandra Hüller be to this year's Best Actress race what Judy Holliday was to 1950?
I mean, would I love to see it? Obviously. But I think the difference was that we had 2 All About Eve nominees that year. And you can talk about vote splitting, but I think Sandra Uller here is just a totally different scenario. Yeah, seeing this question pop up made me want to watch Born Yesterday again.
Yeah, so good. I love her performance in that.
Because it really is a career-defining performance for Sandra. And I would love to see her win. But even winning the César is not enough. You know, she could have won the BAFTA. There were other prizes she would have had to have won to even be in the running for like a three-woman race. But that's just not the case.
I think she would have won the Golden Globe too. Like, I think she would have beaten Lily there because Anatomy of a Fall did really well there. I think this is just a different scenario. I love the spirit of the question. We love going back in time to previous Oscar ceremonies. But I also think one of the interesting things that I remember reading in my Inside Oscar book on the 1950 Best Actress race was that Gloria Swanson thought it was either her or Judy Holliday, and that the All About Eve ladies and Eleanor Parker were out of the race completely. So, and of course, Betty Davis blames Anne Baxter for her loss because she thought she belonged in supporting, which is just delicious. But yeah, I think that Gloria Swanson thought she might lose to Judy Holliday. And for me, Sandra's firmly in third. Like, I think Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone know that they are each other's competition here. Like, it's going to be one of them. So, yeah, I don't think so. But I love, again, I love the question.
Well, and Judy and Gloria both won the Golden Globe. So, if we're looking at that, then it's a Lily-Emma conversation, not Sandra. Like, yeah, maybe in another year. Okay, we are down to our final grouping. Anybody's guess? We have all of the shorts listed here, but we're going to start with a question from Morgan. What feels like the most up-in-the-air categories going into Oscar night?
I really think they're the categories we've listed here. So the three shorts categories and then visual effects. Because visual effects has been a mystery all season, really. So that's what we have here. We have those four categories, which feels, again, strange that we only have four here, but that's how this season has really shaken out.
I'm also just the least versed in visual effects knowledge, so maybe that's why it's last.
It's always the category two on Contenders where I just think, okay, I really have to do some reading for this one.
Yeah. And since we don't have an Avatar type movie, it's harder to say where it's going. But let's start off with live action short. Our nominees here are The After, Invincible, Knight of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue, and The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. So who do you have here?
I recently made a switch here. So I did have The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar for a long time, but I changed it to Red, White, and Blue, and that's what I'm predicting because I think when we look back at short's history, yes, sometimes, you know, a star is tied to the winner. Like, we think about Riz Ahmed in The Long Goodbye, the lesser Long Goodbye. Obviously, the Altman is the superior version. Not that they're even the same thing. They just have the same title. Just like to get that off my chest. Thank you. But I think that The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, yes, it has the star power. Yes, it has Wes Anderson, but it's long and it doesn't really attach to an issue. And a lot of times voters here like to vote for something that's issue-based or that makes them feel like they're voting for something important. And for me, that movie's Red, White, and Blue. It also, I'm just thinking about the movie that when I went to see these in theaters, it's the one I heard people in the lobby talking about and the one that my family liked the most. So for me, I'm kind of just going out on a limb with this one and saying that I don't really think Netflix pushed Henry Sugar as hard as they needed to maybe for it to win here. And this story about a woman crossing state lines to get an abortion in this twist, really for someone else in her life, I think that might hit the voters harder. But it also depends on them watching the movies. That's the other difficult piece of it. Because if they haven't watched and they just think, oh, Wes Anderson, Henry Sugar, like the title, check. That could happen totally. But if they watch them, I think Red, White, and Blue will win.
I think there are a few things to look at. One is what you just mentioned of knowing the story of Henry Sugar. Like, say certain voters read that or had that read to them when they were growing up and they remember it and they say, oh my God, amazing. Check that box. Or if they like Wes Anderson, or if they did watch it, or if they have Netflix and people just loved the access to it. It was harder for me to find Red, White, and Blue. I think you have to pay to rent it, but you advocating for that made me think if it was in the documentary short, if that would have a better chance at winning or not, or if it's a better story told in a narrative form in live action.
That's the tricky part.
Because honestly, I would like to see that win instead of Henry Sugar. But I will say it's also weird thinking that this could be Wes Anderson's first win. So I don't know. If we look at last year, though, it almost feels similar. An Irish Goodbye won, which kind of feels like Henry Sugar. And we both liked The Red Suitcase. And that had the fitting subject matter that could parallel Red, White, and Blue. So I think this could be a case of what we want to win versus what will win. But I do like we're finally split on something.
I know. It took us how many categories? My God. Next up, we have documentary short. Let's see if we're split here as well. Our nominees are The ABCs of Book Banning, The Barber of Little Rock, Island in Between, The Last Repair Shop, and Nai Nai and WIPO. What do you think will win here?
This I was so unsure about too. I thought, you know, the whole season was basically looking like ABCs of Book Banning was going to win. And that was before I saw it. And I saw it and I'm like, this is winning. So I think also just I loved The Last Repair Shop so much and I would love to see that win. That did win the Critics' Choice Doc Short Award, beating ABCs. But I have Nai Nai here. That won the AFI Fest Grand Jury Prize and then multiple other Film Fest prizes. Also, I just can't not think of our favorite Hollywood couple, Lulu Wang and Barry Jenkins, introing this film in theaters and supporting the film and multiple other filmmakers and actors also supporting the movie. Stephanie Hsu was photographed with Sean Wong at a screening. And I think just, again, it made me think of Everything Everywhere and just how quirky that movie was and how much support that had. And that's really what this short channels. I think in documentary, things can also get political and feature current events. And this is not the case with Nai Nai, but it is with ABCs of Book Banning. So if that wins, I wouldn't really be surprised because that really is telling an important story. But I think I'm going to go with something more lighthearted instead. What do you have?
That's so tempting. It is really difficult to say. I'm going with The Last Repair Shop here, and I'm doing it also just, I think, you made a really compelling case for Nai Nai that's making me want to change. But I have to say, I think that the campaign for The Last Repair Shop and how, again, they like voting for an issues-oriented film sometimes here. They like voting for something that makes them feel good. Nai Nai is a short that makes people feel good. It's also short, which helps. I think the length of The Last Repair Shop, I don't know if that will hurt it. I don't think so necessarily. I think that they don't mind that as much in documentary short maybe, but why I'm putting it down here also is because the Los Angeles Unified School District, their education foundation, launched a $15 million campaign that is directly tied to The Last Repair Shop. And this happened as voting was going on, so right before voting. So this direct campaign that ties into the film and that's been advertised everywhere, I think shows its importance and could really benefit it. You know, the fact that $15 million is going to this shop and to help students become instrument technicians. That's a really powerful story that I think if voters know about this and they are campaigning this, that will make them want to vote for it.
Let's move on to animated short, our final shorts category. Our nominees here are Letter to a Pig, 95 Senses, Our Uniform, Pachyderm, and War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. What do you have here?
I'm going with War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. When I watched this short, I said, this is our winner, and I haven't strayed from it. Having John and Yoko in the title and War is Over, exclamation point, styled in all caps. Sometimes they vote for titles, they vote for star power, and this has that. It also has the most ridiculous needle drop I've witnessed in any kind of film. featuring the Christmas song, of course. And yes, the animation reminded me of a video game, and I really didn't enjoy this, but I think the voters will. What do you think?
War's Over is definitely the one that has campaigned the most, or at least that I've seen more. It also won the Annie Award, but that's about it. I have Letter to a Pig right now, and it did win a few international festival prizes. I don't know if that's necessarily something we can look to, but again, if we're looking to some sort of issues-oriented material, Letter to a Pig is about a Holocaust survivor telling their story. And again, I'm thinking of Colette, which won in documentary short a few years ago. And I think the animation style is unique enough, but War's Over is definitely flashier. And the fact that Inspired by the Music of John and Yoko is in the title definitely has an impact on it.
Yeah.
That alone is kind of why I want to put that in.
It's part of the reason why I put it in, so I understand.
Yeah, it just makes me think of who's watching these and trying to get into the mindset of what they would want to vote for. That is just a total question to me.
That's the difficult part about predicting the shorts. It's like, are people abstaining? Are people watching these? Are they just voting for their favorite title? It's just, it feels like a different equation than some of the other categories. But our last category that we're unsure of is visual effects. Our nominees here, we have The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1, and Napoleon. What do you have here?
I have Godzilla Minus 1. Does it make sense? Not really. It's more of Takashi Yamazaki having campaigned a bit more in the past few weeks. If we're looking at the guild at the Visual Effects Society, the Creator won the most prizes. It won 5 of their categories, and Guardians of the Galaxy beat Godzilla in their only category they were nominated for. So, I mean, if we're looking at that, it's not smart of me to vote for Godzilla Minus One, but I think after that film was released, with it getting a second black and white cut release, I think there's just a lot of love for it. And we can also throw Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning into the mix with its SAG stunt ensemble win and that beating John Wick 4. I'm not too sure here. What do you have?
I mean, for everything that you just said, that's why I have The Creator. I'm just going with the guild. It had the most wins there. I think when you think of visual effects, you think of a movie like The Creator. What's different about this category this year is that we don't have just like a default best picture nominee here that we can go with. Like if Poor Things were here, that would be winning. If Oppenheimer were here, I would predict that. But because we don't have that, that's what makes it interesting. I'm going with The Creator because that's what my head says. But if I could vote, I would vote for Godzilla Minus One. And I'm wondering how many members will feel the same way. Will be inspired by its low budget story, will have seen it and will love the creature design, and will just feel like that's something that they want to vote for. Especially because, I mean, Visual Effects Society, that is just visual effects artists. That's not the entire membership. So what happens when you open it up and everyone can vote? Will they go for something like The Creator, whose visual effects are more obvious and that feel, you know, like that more impressive, larger scale win? Or will they vote for the scrappy underdogs of Godzilla Minus One? I don't know. I hope Godzilla Minus One wins here, but I'm going with the guild right now and saying The Creator.
Well, we will see. Our final category, Best Picture. I think this could have been in our in the bag category, but our nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. This is a year where Oppenheimer has won so many awards that as the season continued, it just felt more and more like such a fitting Oscar winner too. And, you know, having support in all the categories so far that we've talked about, and with its potential 8 wins, I think it really is Oppenheimer. I don't even have a number 2 that would be even close.
I'm the same way. It's funny because, yeah, this absolutely could have been in the bag category. We just like ending with the big one. That's why it's here. Mm-hmm. outside of our categories. But yeah, I mean, we got a listener question from G is for Ghost. What are the chances something besides Oppie wins Best Picture? Zero. I mean, it's just, it's winning. There's nothing. It's not like the La La Land year or a year where we have a really close underdog kind of bubbling up. The fact that this movie has essentially had no backlash, it never really turned into the villain, another contender never really emerged as a number two, is odd, really. It doesn't really track with other Oscar seasons. But yeah, I think it's a fitting winner for the year that we've had. I think if you're thinking about the year in film, you think about Barbie and Oppenheimer. So it always, I think, made sense for it to be one of those films. And yeah, it's pretty easily going to win. We also got a question from Kellen. What is number two? I'm excited to see what our friend Kevin Jacobson on his show In the Runner-Up Is says. Mm-hmm. I have Poor Things. I think at one point, I mean, Anatomy of a Fall made sense as a number two. I would go with either of those, really. I think The Zone of Interest has passion that's kind of bubbling up for it. But I would go with Poor Things, I think, which is crazy. I mean, that would be my number 10, but I think it'll be a lot of people's number two.
I think this is a case where when we look at voting or think about what happens, this is a one round and we're done situation.
Yes. I was going to ask you about that, what you thought. Thank you for bringing this up. So every other category besides Best Picture, you just vote for your top choice. But Best Picture uses the preferential ballot, so you rank 1 through 10. And if in the first round of voting, no film has over 50%, then they move to the next round. And they essentially like go round by round, allocating more values to certain films based on ranked choice voting. And then once a film reaches 50%, then it will be crowned Best Picture. I think this might be a first round one and done.
Mm-hmm.
Or if not first, I mean, second or third, it's going to happen very quickly compared to earlier years.
It just feels for me like Oppenheimer is at number one with like 95%. And then something else has like 5% of the vote. There's just nothing coming close. Everyone is talking about Anatomy of a Fall having potential to upset. And, you know, we're underestimating its potential at the Oscars. Again, if it wins screenplay, that's a huge category and well-deserved. I don't think it has a big chance at picture, but I feel like Oppenheimer is almost like an everything everywhere where we're going into the night. It'll be the last category, but we know what the answer is.
Exactly. We also got a really interesting question from Eric Anderson. If you could swap the directors of two Best Picture nominees, who would they be and why? I was really racking my brain for this one. It's hard because so many of these projects feel so tied to that director.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to make the case, but I have a funny one.
I was going to say, do you have a serious one or a funny one?
Mine is funny, but also serious in a way. Like, I think it could work, but it's mostly, the reason I picked it is mostly for laughs.
I'll try to think of a serious one, but my funny one is Barbenheimer. Greta Gerwig's Oppenheimer and Christopher Nolan's Barbie.
Can you imagine Nolan working with that many women? Nolan's America Ferrera monologue would be like the time it takes to understand what it's like to be a woman. And then it would like play some clip in reverse. And Greta's Oppenheimer, I can't even. Kitty and Jean would be more interesting. I'll say that. But I can't imagine. I would be curious what that would be like.
What's yours?
Mine also involves Oppenheimer. But imagine Bradley Cooper's Oppenheimer and Christopher Nolan's Maestro. So I think Christopher Nolan could make a really good Maestro, actually. Because I think that he would focus on Bernstein as this charismatic, emotional individual. I think that he would play with the time in his life. I know we joke about like time and how that works with Nolan, but I think that we would really feel the weight of a lot of his key events in life. I think we would see a bit more about things like the Young People's Concerts and these kind of key events in Bernstein's life. Mm-hmm. And I also think for better or for worse, he would not focus as much on Felicia. I think he would change the perspective entirely to just be about Bernstein. And I'm curious to see what that version would look like instead of the path that Bradley Cooper chose, which was to focus more on her while actually focusing on Bernstein. So I think it would be interesting to see what that looked like. And then as far as Bradley Cooper's Oppenheimer, he loves tortured individuals. That's a theme that's come up for him. And I think we would see that come across with Oppenheimer and Strauss in really unique ways. And the thing about Oppenheimer also, and why it's resonated for me, Hunter Harris wrote a great piece about this. It's absolutely hilarious in her newsletter, Hung Up, where she talks about how Oppenheimer is really for petty people and for people who love drama. And connects it to Amadeus, of course, but it made me sort of think of it as like, what if Oppenheimer were structured more like All About Eve?
Oh my God.
And I think Bradley Cooper would love to live in that space. So that was my answer for this. Because the other ones, it's really difficult. Like, I would love to see Greta Gerwig's Poor Things, but I wouldn't like to see Lanthimos's Barbie. I think that might be absolutely insufferable. I would also love to see Greta Gerwig's Anatomy of a Fall.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing. But I think Justine Triet would pull her hair out making Barbie. I think she would be over it in about 2 seconds. It would be like Barbie starring Virginia Fira, which I want to see.
Yeah, that's kind of the hard thing. My gut is going with two directors that having this question framed in this way makes me feel like they're very similar. And I'm surprised we haven't considered this before. But Celine Song and Alexander Payne, I think they're both good at personal dramas. And honestly, seeing Celine Song's The Holdovers and Payne's past lives, I think could be really interesting. I feel like Sideways really connects with that type of story really well. And Celine Song making anything, I'm all in for. I'm so excited for her next movie. And the love triangle in her film and the trio in The Holdovers, I think there are not direct similarities, but I think something that she would work really well with.
It's just hard because Past Lives is so personal. You're like, oh, like this has to be Celine Song. So if you're maybe just thinking of it as a story that's detached from her, it's not a personal story. It's just someone else's that she's tackling. I can see that switch. But yeah, interesting question. We also had some listener questions that just applied to award season as a whole and how we felt about it. So the first one from Roy Mao, is award season too long?
Like, yes and no. Since nominations, it's only been like a month and a half. It's
yeah.
Not that long. And going through the contenders, I feel like we've just been rushing and we covered so many categories every week. There's just so much information.
Mm-hmm.
Should nominations be sooner? Is maybe my response question to this.
I know. I feel like it always feels shorter. The window between nominations and winners always feels shorter to us because we have to get through 23 categories in our contender series plus predictions in a really condensed amount of time. But I think that what I would do to fix it, because it does feel really long, I think, especially in seasons where you have sweepers or you have predictable winners, it can feel like it's dragging on. I think everyone should vote at the same time, early on. They can't copy each other's homework. Gold Derby can't exist as a site until everyone's voted. And I think that would solve a lot of problems and would make things a bit more exciting. I know that there's an entire industry around this business and awards and PR that really can't exist without the system that as it's set up now. But yeah, it's like if we didn't hear every guild winner and all these awards leading up to the Oscars and knowing that people could look at them and that could inform their voting and that it could just be one award after another, I think that the Oscars don't feel as special anymore because we have so many additional ceremonies. And I think that could be a way to change it up.
If people voted 2 months ago, we would be having completely different conversations.
Yeah.
Maybe for better or worse, but it definitely does change the game on how long the season is. We had other listener questions from Stephen Morgan. They asked, what is one shock win you would love to see? And what is the most shocking upset you would like to see?
Okay, so thinking of shocking upsets and wins, my number one answer to this would be Jonathan Glazer winning Best Director for The Zone of Interest. I think he absolutely deserves it. And I would scream and be very excited. My real answer, though, here is in supporting actor. Can you imagine if Ryan Gosling won?
I can, but I would love it.
That would be so great. I mean, De Niro is my pick there as well. So, like, De Niro or Gosling winning there. I would love that. Mm-hmm. There are so many I would really like. And I mean, those are the ones that stick out now because, I mean, Lily, obviously, that would be my most exciting win, but that isn't like a shocking upset. I'm thinking in categories that are already kind of locked up. Greta Gerwig winning screenplay for Barbie is another one.
That's the one I want most. If we look at other categories, I would love to see Past Lives win original screenplay. I'm sure you would love to see May December. The Boy and the Heron, obviously. And I think Sandra winning actress. That's my biggest one. She's had such an incredible year. But as always, the actress conversation is the most intense. And I love that we have a race there.
And our last question, I think, ties in nicely with how we opened our episode. But Kellen asked, how would Dune Part 2 have, quote, effed things up if it had come out in time? Do you think this would have been a bad thing or a good thing?
It was a smart decision. It was an upsetting one at first, but just seeing all of its technical details and how strong it is in so many components, I'm glad that we don't have to consider it. I think it would have changed a lot of things. My one thought that we can talk about more on our episode is that it didn't win in costume or makeup for part one, even though I still think it should have. So for a sequel to be winning in those categories makes me a little weary, but they are just absolutely stunning. And I think just the grandness of it would have taken other films completely out of this awards conversation, which is insane.
I think it would have affected Poor Things and its chances to win the most, because costume design, production design, and makeup and hairstyling, those are the big ones where I can see, oh, that obviously would have been Dune Part 2's, especially costume design. Oh my God. Gets just the variety there, the grandness of it. I don't know how much it would have affected Oppenheimer. I don't love, spoiler alert, Hans Zimmer's score here. I would have still given it to Robbie Robertson or Goranson. Yeah, I think it's Dune is a serious contender in double digit categories next year, potentially, depending on how the year shakes out, because it's looking to be a very thin year at the box office and potentially for festivals. So I agree with you. I think from an awards perspective and box office too, I mean, it was a smart decision to put it here. But yeah, I don't know. It would have been a very different award season landscape. I also don't think we would be talking about visual effects in anybody's guess. It would be in the bag. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens next season with it. We need Academy Award nominee Austin Butler in supporting actor.
Oh my God. I can't wait to talk about that. Also on Smash or Pass. So yeah, lots to talk about. Well, that was our episode on all of our predictions. I'm excited to see what happens, even if there are only a few categories that we are completely unsure about. But I hope it's a fun ceremony. We officially have Ryan Gosling performing. I'm just Ken, so I am excited for that. Also, bringing back the Best Actress winner, presenting the nominees.
I can't wait for that. I'm so excited to see who presents for each person.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you all for listening to our final predictions episode. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at OscarWildPod. And if you really like our show, you can find bonus content at patreon.com/OscarWild.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you after the ceremony.